The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue the conversation about the complexities of food insecurity and what it means for America. My guests are Max Finberg, director of AmeriCorps Vista, a national service program fighting poverty in America, and Lindsay Morton, assistant director of Healthy Market Programs at Martha's Table. Lines are open. I want to hear from you tonight. If you have any ideas about fighting hunger in your community, sometimes it could be next door, give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Shamir, calling from Annapolis. Thanks for calling, Shamir. What's on your mind?
Well, I had a lot of reserved feelings about certain food programs. I'm a bus monitor for Baltimore City, mm-hmm. and I noticed in Baltimore City or other counties that I assist that even in the summertime, they only have select schools that do the nutrition program to feed the children in the summer. I feel as though children should be able to access that food all summer at all the schools, and as well as be able to get to those places, to get those free resources of the food. And as the gentleman touched on earlier about the farmers markets, they were doing that in Baltimore. They give you a voucher, and it would double if you purchased from the farmers market. And I think instead of it just being in WIC and also in certain, you know, farmers, it should be across the board and try to give them a tax break or some type of stipend for assisting with making sure nutritious food is provided for not only the children but for adults as well. And one of them being YMCA, I commit them because they give my daughter free produce to take home with them every day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Shamir, thank you so much for your contribution to the conversation. Did you want to make a comment about that, Max, at all?
Sure. And then I'll turn it over to Lindsay.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Shamir is absolutely right. Only a small fraction of the kids who get school lunch and school breakfast provided by our taxpayer dollars during the school year get something during the summer. Summer Meals is a great program. DC does the best in the country at making sure kids get those meals, but it's hard. And so we need partners. So we work with groups like Martha's Table. We work with schools. Vista actually provides summer jobs. We have Vista summer associates helping to provide those summer meals all around the country. We actually had a bunch up in Baltimore this summer. And so we're excited to continue that and make sure that those kids who get a meal at school during the school year also get something during the summer.
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I mean, I think the summer meal opportunity is huge this summer. We actually partnered with the city, the Department of Parks and Rec, and a few other agencies to offer 17 no-cost free community pop-up markets across the city. They were open to anyone in the neighborhood. So you and I could have popped in as many times as we wanted to in July and August, accessing high-quality, healthy food. And it was a really amazing opportunity to really embrace the full community, not just elementary schools and Ward 7 and Ward 8, but the entire community. And so it was eye-opening for me to understand that a lot of us, even with means, are still looking for healthier options. We want to know more about how to eat and prepare healthy meals. So as we think about hunger, what is fascinating is it's not just, you know, the man or the individual on the street that is wanting a sandwich. It really is way bigger than that. And so it really exposed me and heightened my awareness to the continued work that we need to do at Martha's Table and as thought leaders to really open up this table, so to speak, to provide many folks room to understand how to eat healthy and access healthy items in their neighborhoods.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Robert, calling from Brentwood. What's on your mind, Robert?
Yes, good afternoon. Oh, good evening.
Hey.
I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to comment. This is a great program. Thank Lord Jesus Christ for y'all being able to do so.
Well, thank you.
You know, the food crisis is terrible all over the world. I'm 65. I'm not a healthy eater, but I can get a bird from the tree, get a coon from the ground. I know how to eat now. Mm-hmm. I can survive.
You must be a Southerner.
Yeah.
I get it.
My mother's from Calvert County.
Okay.
I'm Crosby. Thank you, Lord Jesus. But look, the food banks are doing a great job. You know, there has been a shortage.
Mm-hmm.
From what I've been saying for several months. St. John's Church on Bunker Hill Road. I'm a volunteer.
Okay.
You know, they go to the food bank. I help them to put the food in the warehouse and clean up if I have to.
Go ahead, Robert.
I've been eating all my life. I've seen time in crisis that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I used to eat out the trash can.
Hmm.
I worked in 7 restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Pork chops.
Yeah.
Steaks. I was a dishwasher.
Yeah.
I ran the food through the dishwasher.
Wow.
And bagged up, bring home.
Well, Robert, thank you so much for your contribution to your to this conversation. And I think, you know, one of the things that he is talking about, and we don't hear a lot of discussion about, is the waste of food. Now, yeah, we've seen, and I've seen, you've all seen these stories on network where we see in New York City and here in Washington and in Miami and L.A. and Chicago, high-end restaurants that owners have taken it upon themselves to reach out to the community where you have these, you know, these gourmet meals. But, you know, there's not enough of that. And I think that when you're talking about contributing, you know, to the community and making sure that people do eat well, because it's not just, again, as you said, it's not just about hunger, but it is also about healthy food and health. And so certainly that, I think that's one of the big considerations. And I think that's one of the things that Robert was kind of touching on. I want to go back to the phone lines real quick at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tamara calling from South Florida. Tamara, thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I'd just like to make a comment
sure.
on your show that there actually is enough to feed everyone. There's enough grain to feed everyone. The problem is, in America, 75% of our grain is being fed to the cattle for making meat for people. And if we ate less animals, there would be more grain to feed everyone.
But I think the issue isn't so much about meat or meatless. It is about access.
Absolutely.
Yeah, certainly. We see in communities where there's limited or no access, children have a higher incidence of diabetes, obesity, diet-related illnesses. So I think certainly we can get into, and Martha Sable, we don't prescribe one diet over the other. We really want at a fundamental level folks to have what they need to be healthy and strong. And then from there, give families the choice and the opportunity to make a decision for their family. So whether we're going to go vegan or vegetarian, fundamentally, we want to ensure that you have everything you need to make the best decision, essentially, for your household.
Right. And I don't even mean like for health wise, but I just mean for a regular person on a Western diet, you could feed 10 people on a plant based diet.
True, I would imagine so. But again, where in South Florida are you?
I'm actually in Fort Lauderdale, but I'm from D.C., and this is my favorite radio station.
Well, thank
and I listen
you.
To you through the internet.
Okay, so you're in Fort Lauderdale, and you know you could argue that is a wealthy city where there are very few areas of food deserts because it's also very close to South Beach and you know and Miami and the like. And so again, I don't think the issue is what you feed the masses. It's how you feed the masses.
Right.
And certainly if you do not live in communities where there is, you know, perhaps a Wegmans or a Whole Foods or an upscale Safeway or an upscale Giant food store or whatever, you know, the issue is if you don't have a car, if you don't have access to, you know, to a bus or the money to catch the bus all the way,
you know, to the other side of your community and then all the way back and to lug it back. And you all have seen, you know, the elderly with these,
yep,
these carts. And I just can't imagine what it is like to drag these wheeled carts and bring your groceries home, because if you don't, you know, at some point you get tired.
Yeah.
You know.
So. And if you look for cheaper, convenient options, and oftentimes those are not the healthiest. And particularly when we think about seniors and children, vulnerable populations where we know healthy eating is critical, those populations literally cannot afford to go the cheap route. And so, again, to your point, access becomes paramount in closing gaps and sustaining people and making sure they're healthy and vibrant.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
A couple things. One, in terms of diet and what Tamara raised, Michelle Obama, our fabulous first lady, has gotten real engaged in this. So her Let's Move initiative has been talking about what kinds of food, but without prescribing something specific. So choose myplate.gov. The MyPlate symbol took over after the food pyramid, gives a great balance to your point that you don't need to do huge wholesale changes. You need to do something. Mm-hmm. And then, as Robert touched on, one of the great things we see is the modern day gleaning, that biblical principle of food rescue. Mm-hmm. Right here in D.C., D.C. Central Kitchen has done a great job in doing what you talked about, rescuing that stuff from high-end restaurants, from hotels, from receptions. Turning the roast beef that might have fed 100 folks into beef stroganoff for 400, or in a healthy way where they're also training folks as culinary experts so they can get a job, so they don't have to depend on the assistants down the road. They're able to help themselves. And just finding those creative ways of doing that in the marketplace. So we have now corner stores that have fresh fruits and vegetables, whereas before they never would have offered something like that. Those kind of things are what we need to continue doing to address both the hunger side as well as the food desert side.
Tamara, thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. As I mentioned before, I wanted to know a little bit more about AmeriCorps Vista. What are the volunteers doing as it relates to hunger and poverty? How many are we talking about? Where are they?
Great questions. AmeriCorps Vista volunteers in service to America are the Domestic Peace Corps. We've been around for more than 50 years, being the front lines in the war on poverty. So we have more than 8,000 folks who have served a year of their lives given back, addressing poverty in some way, shape, or form. Could be housing, could be education, and a lot of them focus on hunger. So we have folks, for example, throughout the state of Ohio, working with the Ohio Association of Food Banks, with agencies that are feeding folks just like Martha's Table's doing it here in D.C. And what they're able to do is connect folks in need with income tax returns, with other benefits they might not even know about, all in not just a direct service way. They don't do that. They're looking at building the capacity of the host organization. It could be a nonprofit, could be a tribal or local government. So this summer was out in southeastern Oklahoma with the Choctaw Nation and the tribe there. They have a Boys and Girls Club, like many communities, but they didn't have the resources to provide the meals that came from USDA through the summer feeding program. But they didn't have enough people to do some of the activities that would attract the kids there. That's where they turned to AmeriCorps Vista to say, we'd like one of those summer vistas to help us do the outreach, do the programming that's going to bring kids to the meal. Because again, DC's fortunate that it's easier to get to some of the sites that Lindsay described. In rural Oklahoma or Ohio, or take your pick, it's hard.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about that, but I need to take a break because I used to live in Ohio. And certainly when you talk about rural communities, you know, those are even, some could argue, even more severe food deserts, because travel, again, a huge issue in addition to you know, economic situations that may be untenable for a lot of people. I'm going to be back in just a moment. We're going to talk more about that and Martha's Table as well. What's happening in the cities with the food deserts? And I'd like to hear from you again if you have a chance. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the complexities of food insecurity and what it means for America. Of course, my guests are Max Finberg, Director of AmeriCorps Vista, a national service program fighting poverty in America, and Lindsay Morton, Assistant Director of Health Market Programs at Martha's Table. If you want to comment, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before we go back to Lindsay, Max, I want to ask you what your volunteers are finding in rural communities as well. You mentioned Ohio, you mentioned Oklahoma. Well, you know, the D.C. Metro, Virginia, Maryland has rural areas that aren't, you don't have to drive that far before you're in the country.
You sure don't. You just head to Southern Maryland. You go to La Plata where Kim is, or you go out a little further past Gaithersburg and you're in country. No doubt your point that it so much more difficult for the transportation of getting kids to food, getting kids to the sites, getting folks who don't have enough gas money to the pantry where they can get enough for a few days. Those hurdles are extremely hard, but that's where the human resource solution of AmeriCorps Vista can come in and getting innovative. Let's put those school meals on a mobile site like a converted school bus, as some of we're doing in rural Tennessee. Let's make sure we're serving meals at rural housing sites with the U.S. Department of Agriculture's rural development sites that we're doing and talking about. And our vistas are able to get creative, are able to find ways of connecting folks in need with the food that's available through a number of different channels. You're right, there are hurdles. Mm-hmm. And in rural America, distance is a big one of them. And so we're excited. We just announced today we're expanding some of our work in Indian country. Mm-hmm. So we're doing more in the poorest places in our entire country that are rural, that are isolated, that can use the boost that an AmeriCorps Vista volunteer can provide.
And Lindsay, here in the city, same problem, but different challenges when you're talking about the big city.
Sure. So I'm with an organization called Martha's Table. We've been operating for over 35 years with the belief that every child deserves the opportunity for their brightest future and a deeply engaged community and family committed to their success. And we know that food is at the pillar of that. We started as a soup kitchen, essentially. Gone are the days of the soup kitchen and the food pantry. When we opened our doors over 35 years ago on 14th Street, the corridor looked a lot different than it does today. And so from the soup kitchen grew a mobile food service truck, which still operates today, known as McKenna's Wagon. But then other services like our Joyful Food Market program, which operates in 29 elementary schools after school in Ward 7 and Ward 8, where we stage a farmer's market, in effect, for families to come and shop and engage with us and learn how to cook and learn more about healthy eating and meal preparation. We also prepare healthy meals and snacks on site for the children that we engage through our education program. And so really getting out of the box and, to your point, innovating has helped us kind of be current and be relevant with where people are based on their current needs. A lot of folks have an issue with coming to a pantry or a place such as Martha's Table. So being able to go right to where we know there's need and designing things with dignity and with quality and care is an opportunity for us to reach people and make them feel dignified and great about choosing some of the services that we have. And so I see it. We engage 15,000 volunteers annually, and they see hunger in a number of different forms. But at the top of the list is just being able to meet people where they are and having our volunteers know that it doesn't always look the same. Hunger doesn't discriminate. And so you may have somebody who with scraggly clothes are coming off the street, or you may have a working mom who just needs a little extra in the pantry to keep the kids hungry and fed until her support and relief come in for the next month. And so not being so boxed in on what hunger looks like and feels like, I think, has been something that we try to preach to our volunteers, getting them outside of the building, in fact, and around the city, understanding what's happening beyond the walls of the building has been really helpful, too, in connecting people with the reality of hunger here in D.C., a city with a lot of wealth and opportunity.
What is the most difficult thing in serving the population that Martha's Table is trying to address?
Needs are ever changing, right? A lot of folks who we find, particularly in our school market program, families may move. We may start a connection, and then that mom or that dad, they may move across the line into Maryland. And so we're not able to provide the same service because our program doesn't extend that far. The notion of this is a handout is often big, too, really helping folks understand that this is not about identifying you as low income or hungry, but really helping you become a better mom and a better, even better mom and dad through an opportunity to access food at no cost. Who doesn't love free food? I know I do. Getting people out of their comfort zone has been challenging. Certainly with the relief program, McKenna's Wagon, just I think day in and day out, just seeing the same people for years and years and years, and knowing that while, you know, we're constant, we provide that hot meal, we can't reach those other companion issues to help them not need us anymore. And getting out of the hunger business is really challenging. So those are things that we deal with, but we're still committed to being there and working to address them every day.
You know, Max, during the course of the recession, we saw poverty skyrocket. Yep. Here in America. As the nation begins to recover economically, are things also getting better when it comes to hunger? I remember coming back here in 2008 and doing stories in 2009 and 2010 and seeing middle-class families, moms and dads, and just folks who had, you know, advanced degrees. Mm-hmm. Who had, you know, McMansions and luxury cars. And when the recession hit, they lost some or all of those things, and they ended up in the food pantry. Are we seeing less and less of that now?
Thanks be to God, yes. We have turned a corner. We are doing better. So you're right. We've heard tons of stories at the depth of the recession of folks who used to volunteer at pantries now needing their services. But the Department of Agriculture just released a new study where hunger, or the threat of hunger, food insecurity, as they call it, has dropped significantly, and especially when we look back to 2009. So now we're fortunate enough that it's only about 1 in 8 households. Used to be 1 in 7. Mm-hmm. Used to be even higher than that. But that's still 1 in 8, almost a little more than 12% of the households in the richest country in the history of the world. So it's still too much. But we are very, very glad to be able to say we have turned a corner. Some of the programs that were designed to be that safety net so there wouldn't be starvation here in this country, they worked. The SNAP program worked. School lunch and breakfast worked. We just need to keep fine-tuning those and improving those to make sure that folks don't have those tough choices of, I'm going to keep the lights on, I'm going to make sure I get my medication, but I can't eat. Mm-hmm. No, fortunately, fewer of our brothers and sisters are faced with those tough choices today than a few years ago.
But I think it's interesting that in this conversation there is a three-leg stool, and one of those legs is missing, because obviously, you know, Max, at one point you were, you know, working in, you know, federal government, which we've already spoken about, and Lindsay working in nonprofit. But don't corporations need to really shoulder some of this responsibility in a very visible way? And I don't mean visible for the cameras and for the media, but for the community at large.
Absolutely. I think collaboration is key, and I would argue that much of the success in reducing hunger and food insecurity has come through collaboration and partnership in a unique way. At the nonprofit level, we've seen partners such as Martha's Table and the Capital Area Food Bank just do business a little bit differently, not assuming that folks are going to come into the building, but actually going out into the community. We also, in our work, we work with a host of different corporations, folks that you would never believe are curious about this issue and interested in addressing it. So certainly really impressing upon the corporate community their not only need but responsibility to help and support these efforts is key, because through support comes collaboration and comes innovation and comes access to resources and tools and technology and tips. And that is what really, for me, makes a difference. And it's a compelling argument to get the corporate community more engaged and really aware of how they can affect change.
You just can't throw money at this.
No,
but people are smart. And so the best solution to the problem of hunger is a good job so that you have money to buy food. And then you get into some of the issues we've been talking about in access and food deserts. But people with limited resources make smart choices, too. They just have hard choices. So they're spending their money pretty wisely, mm-hmm. but it runs out.
Yeah.
And so that's the crux of it, is we still need to make sure folks have more money in their pocket to make sure they're buying the food that they need.
Well, I think that's a good way to end this conversation. But I want to thank both of you, Max Finberg and Lindsay Morton, for sharing with us. And certainly, hopefully, the work that you all are doing will not only fill bellies, but fill bellies with healthy food.
Absolutely.
and move people, you know, up and into the right direction. Also, you know, learning how to cook, mm-hmm. you know, is also, you know, a good thing. That's a different show.
But, Harold, as a Howard alum, I am thrilled to have been on the show. I was a colleague of Manzi Pullins and a big fan of Jackie Gale's Web, so it's an honor to be
here.
Two
greats here, two good folks here. So again, Max, thank you, and Lindsay, thank you so much. I appreciate your input. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Thursday, September 29th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at 8 on Facebook at Harold Fisher WHUR or Twitter at H Fisher WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 140.